rise to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
So it is. Mr. David Britton.
Hi, how are you, Big Hungry?
Not bad, not bad. What's going on in Spacetown, a.k.a. everywhere that is not here?
Everywhere that's not here.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good answer to your question from the last show.
Oh, right. What is
space?
Yeah, that seems like a casual, it's a bit of a short word for such a fancy big old thing.
Yeah, well, I'd actually sort of, there's been nothing really happening, you know, and I was actually preparing to talk about that. And then, of course, this morning, first thing there, I see on my phone all these media reports of alien life found on Venus. So it's something I couldn't really ignore. So we'll have to wait till next time to talk about space.
It's a solid ace up the sleeve. We can sort of keep
So I guess you might have seen the headlines yourselves.
Mm.
It's not quite as dramatic in the public mind anyway as it sounds. There's a good quote that one of the co-authors of the study this came from. He says there, as far as, you know, is this life on Venus? He says, it's not a smoking gun, he says, but he carries on, it's not even gunshot residue on the hands of your prime suspect, but there is a distinct whiff of cordite in the air which may be suggesting something.
Okay.
So that sort of gives an idea of what this is.
They'll take anything,
sort of,
eh?
Getting to.
At this point, I reckon they'll take just about anything. You know what I mean? People just shoot out a little email.
The idea of the possibility of life being in the clouds of Venus is not new. Carl Sagan speculated that in the academic circles back in 1967. So it's been around for quite a long time.
Carl Sagan, you say?
On the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam.
The man himself, Carl Sagan. What a legend.
Yeah, he was a great man, really.
Right on.
So, I mean, what he also said, that, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Fair.
So this is evidence, but it's not extraordinary yet.
Okay.
So basically what happened is this group was able to identify a particular chemical, a gas in the clouds of Venus called phosphine. It's mostly known for being a rat poison and a chemical weapon in the First World War. And it's really only made two ways. One is artificially in industrial processes, and the other is from probably microbes in animals. A waste product from microbes.
Okay.
But they don't really understand whether it's the microbes that produce this phosphine or whether it's the decomposition of organic material. So that will be a chemical process. But the surprising thing about finding it in Venus is that phosphine contains a phosphorus atom and three hydrogen atoms. So you need hydrogen to form phosphine.
Okay.
Now, at Venus, the atmosphere is pretty much carbon dioxide. It's a very thick atmosphere, it's very deep, and it's very hot. But if you go up through the clouds at about 50 kilometers or so high, it gets cooler and cooler as you get higher, of course. And there, it does get down about 30 degrees, which is, you know, reasonably pleasant as far as life as we know it is. And so that's sort of the zone that people have been sort of thinking about, and that's pretty much where they think this phosphine is. But any hydrogen in the atmosphere of Venus is long gone. It's the same in on Earth.
Mm.
Our atmosphere has extremely small amounts of hydrogen because it's the lightest element. It just floats to the surface and floats away into space and is blown away by the solar wind. The same for Venus. So where would this hydrogen be coming from is part
a
of
giant,
the issue.
A giant dead space sort
well,
of octopus in the sky or some shit?
Activity. Maybe,
oh, right.
Maybe Venus has more
microbes than that,
active volcanoes than thought.
Yeah.
But again, one of the co-authors said that, well, that would only make sense if Venus had about 200 times more volcanoes active than Earth does, which it seems unlikely. But hard to tell, though, because you can't actually photograph the surface because the cloud and the atmosphere is so thick.
Maybe a couple of super volcanoes back in the day, you know?
Well, again, if it's been back in the day, over time that hydrogen's just going to make its way to the top of the atmosphere and be lost to space.
Okay.
That's one of the problems. And the other side of it is that in that cloud layer that we're talking about, it's very, very concentrated sulfuric acid. Much more concentrated than the sulfuric acid rain that we get on Earth, and so that would destroy any life that might be there. That's what's thought, anyway.
I wonder.
Basically, the phosphine shouldn't be there, but it is, and it's in significant amounts. And what they need to do, I guess, is send probes up there that can actually spend some time in the atmosphere and, you know, taste the atmosphere, really, and get a much closer idea of what's going on. They can do some tests back on Earth, and one of them, of course, would be to really nail down what happens on Earth with microbes and producing phosphine here.
It's amazing how sort of one thing can kind of flip the script for everyone, you know, like, what? What's that thing? Okay, let's go have a look. I honestly think that it's kind of likely that we'll find AI before we find aliens. Find like there'll be some kind of little robot. Be like, oh shit, what made that?
Could you speak up just a little bit?
I'm just predicting we'll find AI and before we find aliens, so to speak, organically, organic matter aliens.
It's a bit like looking in a mirror, isn't it?
Hmm.
I don't know about my intelligence, though. Probably not my mirror.
Definitely not me, dog. Rocket Lab secretly launched their first satellite.
Yes, well, last time we talked about the fact that Rocket Lab was back in business after their failure, the previous launch, didn't get to orbit. And in fact, Johnny asked me, he said, oh, no, what was the payload? And I said, I wasn't sure. So, I mean, I knew they had a commercial payload. What I didn't know, and what was only announced afterwards, was there was a secret payload on board, and that was a satellite belonging to Rocket Lab itself. So they secretly launched their own satellite on that that time. It's called First Light, and it's basically a technical demonstration satellite. They have a satellite launching platform called Photon, and so they can use that to launch other people's satellites. And by launching their own one last time, they're showing that what they can provide to customers is a quick development process. So an idea for a project, for instance, could go from initial concept to orbit in less than 18 months. So Rocket Lab would provide the whole process and using their own launching system, get someone's project up into space in a very quick space of time.
How are you allowed to?
Yeah, that was a bit of a secret, that one.
How are you allowed to secretly launch anything? Shouldn't you have books that you have to keep and sort of ask if something's going to be above, or like, how does it all work? Like, seems a little bit reckless.
I think by secret it means it wasn't public knowledge. They would still have to go through FAA and other hoops. Yes. So it's not entirely secret. You can't, like, stick a cat on board and hope no one notices.
Please, can we do that, though? Cheers.
Well, black cat, no one's going to see it. Anyway, I didn't say that.
The little night sky cat. We've actually just had a text in saying, according to Rick and Morty, literally everything is in space. It's pretty accurate. Yep.
Yeah, well, we'll talk a bit more about space next time.
What's
I've got a bit more to talk about that.
What's a 3,200 megapixel camera?
Pretty big.
Was it? I'm trying to remember.
That's record-breaking.
Okay.
So, I mean, you have on your phones, you know, 12 or 20 megapixels for your cameras there, and you get bigger than that on your DSLR at home and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this one is 3,200 megapixels. It is just an incredibly huge.
Sounds unflattering, to be honest.
Well, it's to go on a telescope, in fact. It's a telescope that's being built in Chile, in the Andes Mountains at the moment. And this will be this will do a survey of the sky, this huge survey. And so to capture huge, wide areas of the sky, they need a large collecting area, not just in the mirror, but in the camera part of it as well. So this is, you know, over half a metre wide detection area, 189 individual CCD devices. And it's got the resolution that it would be able to see a golf ball at 25 kilometres away.
Okay.
I mean, it's extremely...
So they're already thinking about using
resolution.
It for golf. That's great.
Sorry?
They're already thinking about using it for sports. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid, you know, to get analogy across to people, you know, sports analogies are good.
Speaking of looking at things far away, what's going on in the night sky?
Night sky, well, a fair amount, but it just,
wow.
The main things just at the moment are next Tuesday, it's the equinox, so that's when we change over from winter to summer. The days get longer than the night.
Mm.
It's actually at 11:30 at night on Tuesday, so really it's 22nd, 23rd.
A bit weird.
Both sort of either side.
Didn't quite nail that,
equinox.
Did we? Okay.
The following weekend, 27th, is when daylight saving starts in New Zealand. So Sunday week, our clocks go back. So I thought I'd mention that now because it will happen before our next show. So summer is sort of on the way, which is good. Thursday this week is new moon, so the skies will be even darker and better to look out and see the faint things. And then from Sunday, it will be the crescent moon there, and then the moon will get brighter from next week. So it'll start washing out the sky for the faint things then. But, yeah, the next week or so, very dark skies with no interference from the moon, which is good.
I love a little sickle moon, you know, a little crescent moon. I love it.
Yeah.
Cute little
bugger. Of course, when you see a thin crescent moon, it's always near the horizon as well.
Huh.
And so you get that lovely juxtaposition of the moon in the sky and whatever is in the near view as well.
Mm-hmm.
Quite good for photographs, of course. One thing that people are having a go at is to see whether they can see Uranus. I'm not going to say it the other way.
Fair enough.
It's very faint, but it can be seen. It's in the morning sky. In the northwest, before sunrise, Mars can be seen there. And Uranus is just to the right. I can't really describe on the radio exactly where to find it. But it's about 30 degrees, 34 degrees above the horizon before sunrise. So it's reasonably high. It's not very high, but it can be seen. Best way is to use binoculars to find it. But it is visible if you're in a really dark site away from the city, naked eye, just a very faint dot. To find out exactly where it is, I'd suggest people Google. That's probably the only way to do it rather than trying to describe it over the radio.
Fair enough. Okay, and Stardome activities kicking on?
Stardome, yeah. Stardome's up and running, which is good, under the current
2.5
restrictions, of course. Yeah, exactly. The school holidays, at the moment we're planning for those 2 weeks to have planetarium shows. So there'll be 7 shows, so on the hour. So these are family and school-age children based, so shows like Accidental Astronauts, Tilt, Little Star That Could, Perfect Little Planet, We Are Aliens, Looking Up, and We Are Astronomers. So check out the website, stardome.org.nz, for the details of that and all the other things that are going on, because Maori Language Week this week, so we're doing a bunch of stuff around that, with an astronomy focus, of course.
Do most of the stars
look at Facebook and Instagram?
Is most of the sky sort of, has it got Te Reo names or translations for a lot of it, or is a lot of it not quite translated?
It depends how deep you want to go. I mean, strictly speaking, if you go far enough, there are names for a very, very small amount of what you can be seen in the sky.
Right.
When you're talking about billions of stars and billions of galaxies.
Of course.
And so they just have catalogue designations.
Terreo,
for what you can see naked eye, it covers pretty much the whole sky.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And the translations for things like Pluto, which of course can't be seen, or Neptune, yes, that there are Maori terms for those.
Nice one.
Yeah, yeah. They're very, very important. Not just that side of it, but, you know, the stories that go...
Of course,
They
were travelling via those stars
for
a long time before we were around, so absolutely. Hey, David, it's always a pleasure, mate, and we'll catch up next in a couple of Tuesdays for Spaced Out.
Yeah, well thanks, and I presume Johnny will be safely back from his skiing.
Depends, if he's going, he should be going so extra that he's kind of falling off. That's the moral of, like, extreme sports. If you're not falling, you're not pushing it hard enough, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just stay on peace. That's the main thing, eh?
Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.